Hello, welcome friends to another edition of Sustainability Now with me, Justin Mogg, here on your community radio, Forward Radio, WFMP LP Louisville, broadcasting here from downtown Louisville at the historic Hayburn Building at 106.5 FM and live streaming to the world at forwardradio.org. Even if you're not listening online, though, we want you to go to forwardradio.org and join our station. This is a community radio station. It is for you. It is for the people by the people, and that means we want you behind these microphones, whether you have an idea for a brand new weekly program you want to do, or maybe just a one-time thing you want to try out on our access hour, or if you want to be a guest on a program like this, go to forwardradio.org and click on participate. We also rely entirely on your financial contributions. This is a listener-supported, sustained station, and the amazing thing is it only takes $20 a day to keep this great community resource broadcasting, so figure out how you can become a member of our station by going to forwardradio.org and clicking on donate. Well, what happens each week on Sustainability Now is we bring in some of my favorite people from around the community. Sometimes they're new to me, but today is a good dear friend of mine who are doing the good work of making sustainability a reality now in our community. That means that they're not just paying attention to what's going on in the environment, but also social and economic issues and trying to make it all work together at once. And what we're going to talk about today is one of my favorite issues, which is growing things. And for that, I have Lilias Pettit-Scott in the studio with me. Hey, Lilias.
Hello.
It's good to have you finally in here. I've been wanting to get you in the studio with me for a long time. Lilias is an urban agriculture conservationist with an organization that I bet many of our listeners aren't that familiar with, maybe vaguely familiar with, called the Jefferson County Soil and Water Conservation District. First of all, folks, you can find out more about what this is at jeffcd.org. But Lilias, why don't you tell us about what the Soil and Water Conservation District is?
Yeah, I think you're right, Justin. Most people that I meet have maybe heard about the conservation district, but don't totally understand what we do. So there is a conservation district in every county in Kentucky. There's actually one county that has two. I'm not sure how they worked that out, but they got lucky. And our conservation district...
So it's like state mandated?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. Our conservation district came to be in 1944.
Wow.
And many of them were started because of the issues that we were seeing around agriculture with us losing our topsoil back in the Dust Bowl time. So as an extension, basically, of the USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service Agency, the Soil and Water Conservation Districts work on the local level to assist landowners with implementing conservation practices on their land and protecting our resources of soil and water, and also wildlife and forestry and other things that really just go back to our natural resources and protecting and conserving them.
I was going to say, so it's not just landowners who are farmers.
Right.
But all kinds of landowners.
All kinds of landowners.
And what about when we start talking about an urban setting like Jefferson County? What about people who aren't landowners? Do you work with them too?
I do. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for me to educate everyone on the impact that just their life has on our environment. And that even if you don't own land, you interact with the natural environment in anything that you do.
Absolutely.
So, you know, a lot of what I specifically do in our county focuses on connecting residents to urban agriculture and local food production while also helping folks understand their soil resources and manage them in a sustainable way. But, you know, that looks like me doing workshops around the community. I meet with urban farmers and community gardeners and home gardeners to just help them to do what they want to do in a way that also benefits the environment.
Yeah, that's what sustainability is all about, right?
Yeah.
achieving our goals, whether they're food production or forest preservation or whatever it is, in a way that is sustainable. And so I honor you for that good and important work, and especially in an urban setting, which has all kinds of challenges that the rural settings don't. I guess it's a little bit different from the extension service. Why don't you tell me in your own words how you see that collaboration working, or how what the differences are with Jefferson County Extension?
Okay, sure. So the conservation district, because we have kind of this working agreement with the Natural Resources Conservation Service and the Division of Conservation position within the state of Kentucky. We are really...
Which is in the Energy and Environment Cabinet?
Energy and Environment Cabinet, yep. We are really tasked with bringing those resources to our local community. So we're seen kind of as that connection to those larger agencies and groups. And there are a number of programs through the NRCS, like grant funding programs that flow through the conservation district. So folks that are interested in implementing conservation programs on their land, like, for instance, doing riparian buffer plantings to protect stream banks or native plant grass plantings.
Really?
They can apply for funds that are part of the USDA's program, but they flow through the conservation district. So we're here to help them kind of get access to that, to those programs.
And even down to the level of like a homeowner in a neighborhood who backs up on Beargrass Creek or something like that?
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm,
exactly. Yeah. And so the difference, I would say, between us and the Extension office is that Extension is really there to provide a very deep knowledge around agriculture in all aspects. You know, when you're looking at doing production with pest control,
yeah.
and they also touch on soil issues. Mm-hmm. They work with seasonality and they're constantly testing varieties of plants that grow well in our region and things like that. And so they're very connected to research at our land grant universities, and they really act as the agents that bring that information out to the public.
Yeah.
And so their focus is more heavily on the horticulture side.
Home economics too.
Yeah.
Right?
And oh, that's true.
Canning,
they also, they have home economics.
Home finances and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like Soil and Water Conservation District is much more focused on the natural resource side of things and protecting our natural resources. So that's very cool. So jeffcd.org is the place to go to learn more about the Jefferson County Soil and Water Conservation District and programs that they have. You may hear us talking about some things during our conversation today that you'll want to look up, and that's the place to go. But what I invited you here today to talk about is a fun concept that I think a lot of people in Louisville don't think about too much as a possibility, which is cold weather growing. We still have a little bit of cold weather left for this spring, and certainly now is the time that people are starting their seeds and things like that. But we want to expand the conversation too to talk about like how you can grow out of the normal season that people think about growing, whether it's fall, winter, or spring right now. Why is this such an exciting issue for you?
Well, I get really excited about it because it means that we aren't limited by the, you know, maybe 5 or 6 months of the year that we think we can grow food in. We really can grow food year round here in our region. And, you know, there's a lot of benefits to doing food production in a colder season as well that you might not realize are there that are different from when you're growing in the warmer season. And so I get really excited about it also because it means that you can have fresh food year round that you can grow yourself. So, you know, you have control over that and you can feed your family.
Yeah. And we're not just talking about, you know, raising chickens and eggs and animal stuff. This is actual like plant production in the cold seasons,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So we're going to talk about some of the advantages of doing this if you've never done it before. I mean, maybe it probably people's like gateway drug to cold weather growing, right, is starting seeds indoors for their garden. I think it's pretty common practice, or maybe they have a little greenhouse somewhere where they do that. But if we think about the broader context of growing, you know, fall, winter, spring, there's lots of advantages, right? Like, let's just talk about pests.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the gardener's biggest challenges. It's one of the most discouraging things for people who do a summer garden can be problems with pests. And there's good strategies for managing that too, even in the summer, that maybe we want to talk about. I don't know. But the advantage in the winter is that there's just hardly any, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The pests, you know, the pests that you really deal with in the summer, they almost disappear in the winter.
Like magic.
I mean, you know, a lot of them are hiding in the soil or, you know, hibernating for the winter.
Yeah.
Some of them actually, if it gets cold enough, get killed over the winter. But they don't bother our plants as much as they do for sure in the summertime. So it's a great advantage to growing in the winter is that you don't have to deal with the pest issues that you do in the summer.
Now, there's still like the non-insect problems for growing, diseases, viruses, things like that. They're not really impacted by the seasons as much, right?
Some of the funguses that you can see on plants are because they don't spread, you know, below like 55 degrees, things like that.
Okay.
So you can see a reduction in those depending on what your growing environment is in the winter. So yeah, there is a benefit to winter growing as well around some of that fungal disease that you can see in plants. Yeah.
Okay, that's a good point. It's also, of course, fresh produce year round. as we said, super awesome. But it's also an activity that you can do in the doldrums of winter, right?
Absolutely. And so Justin and I think share a love for Wisconsin because he spent a good amount of time life. But when I was younger, I lived there when it would, you know, be very, very cold. And the thing that was so great is that there was this culture of kind of doing things
winter
outside,
recreation.
Moving,
yeah,
getting out, moving your
around,
body.
Right.
So I get stir crazy for sure in the winter.
We all get that cabin fever, right?
And gardening during the winter is a great way to get outside and move your body and get some exercise, breathe some fresh air, and burn some calories.
You also make the point that it can help with improved soil quality. Tell me about that. How does that work?
So the main benefit to improving soil quality by doing winter gardening is that you are keeping plants growing in the soil over the year.
Keeping the soil alive.
Keeping the soil alive, exactly. So I think it's very common as gardeners to, you know, kind of get to the end of the season that we feel when we see our tomato plants dying and the, you know, the peppers are dying and we kind of pull all the plants out and we leave the garden kind of just empty and bare. And in terms of soil quality, that's actually one of the worst things you can do for your soil for it to maintain its vigor and the beneficial bacteria in the soil to live. They need something to feed on constantly. And so it's kind of thinking about like if you had pets underground, right, that you wanted to take care of.
That's a good way
and
to think of it.
The plants growing in the soil with their root systems are actually continuing food cycle to all of our beneficial bacteria that live in the soil. It also prevents soil compaction. So when our soils are bare and we have precipitation that hits the soil,
which we've been having a lot of lately.
Yes. It's like a sledgehammer hitting the surface of the soil and it actually compacts the soil and pushes the air out of the soil. And ideally our soils have about 25% air and 25% water and then about 45% minerals and 5% organic material. That kind of makes up like a really great soil. And so as the soils get compacted and we lose that air, the bacteria lose their ability to breathe and it becomes very difficult for the soils to move water through them and for water to drain and filter through the soil. So keeping plants growing, it slows down the impact of water on the soil. So it actually reduces soil compaction over the winter.
Well, and those soil microbes being active help keep the soil uncompacted and loose.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I think people who haven't studied soils or done a lot of gardening kind of assume that soil is just this dead medium, but that's not good. That's not what we want for healthy plants, right? We really need a rich ecosystem underground.
Yeah. Our soils are very much alive. And I think our job to really, if we're going to be interacting with the soil, is to just really keep them happy and healthy and be stewards of the soil. Exactly. Yeah.
Soil husbandry, if you will.
We should add that as a list of like farming, soil husbandry.
Or at least worm husbandry. My guest today here on Sustainability Now is Lilias Pettit-Scott, urban agriculture conservationist with the Jefferson County Soil and Water Conservation District. Yes, even here in urban Louisville, we have a soil and water conservation district that provides many services to you, any landowners, and even people who don't own land but are growing things here in Jefferson County. And you can learn more at jeffcd.org. We're talking about cold weather growing, fall, winter, and right now in the spring. Now, the other big advantage, of course, is that some plants actually do better in cooler temperatures. People think like, oh, you can only grow stuff in the summer, but actually there's all kinds of really delicious things that don't do well in the summer, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of our cold tolerant plants actually are sweeter when they grow throughout the winter. So if you've ever had, you could do kind of like a side-by-side testing, like a spinach that grows in like warmer weather versus spinach that grows in colder weather. Yeah. And it would be significantly sweeter and more delicious if it was grown in colder weather. Same with carrots. Uh-huh. Carrots get sweeter and just so good when they're grown. Yes, beets are a great example. Yeah. Yep.
So that's a bonus. And then there's things like, kale that kind of doesn't do much in the middle of the summer. But if you are able to sustain it through the coldest season, it can bounce back, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when, you know, the day length gets a little longer in the spring, the soil temperatures warm up a little bit, it'll really start to produce more. I mean, it'll grow over the winter and it will, you know, you'll be able to harvest. But there are definitely those optimal temperatures for certain plants. And at certain times throughout the year, they grow a lot, but they can also still stay alive and grow a little.
Yeah.
And you can still harvest them and eat kale.
Cool. That's a good thing. Everybody loves that.
Yeah.
Okay. So the last big advantage we're going to talk about, and then we'll get more into the like, how do I do this, is that, you know, cold weather growing can provide the kind of niche market for urban farmers when maybe prices are better, right?
Absolutely. I've interacted with a lot of folks that source local food in our area. And what I hear over and over again is that there becomes this period of time between, you know, October and March when they don't have access to all of the foods that they have access to in the summer months. And granted, like a tomato is a heat tolerant plant. So that is not something that you're necessarily going to grow in the winter unless you have a heated environment with lights that you, where you're going to do that. But there are a number of things that they can still get from farmers. And there are more and more farmers that are starting to understand that that is a market that they can add to their production and that they can tap into over the winter so that they can increase what they can grow and sell to local
prices.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can charge a premium when you're the only one who has you know, spinach in January.
So there are farmers or urban gardeners that you're working with now who are already tapping into those niche markets for cold weather growing.
Yes, absolutely. And the Conservation District is working to get more folks who are interested in doing that the resources they need to be able to do that. And we do that mostly through a program that we have called the Urban High Tunnel Initiative.
Uh-huh. Okay. Good. We're going to get into the how to, hopefully people are sold now. Like, okay, I'm willing to try it. And we're going to talk about high tunnels for sure. But before we even dive into that, can I just back us up a second? Give us a feeling for the landscape of, like, there's many ways to grow food in these cold times, right? So give us a feel for what that landscape of possibilities looks like.
Like what you would actually do to
You do it from a cold frame to indoor.
Okay. So I think when we started this conversation, you mentioned like starting seeds indoors.
Right.
And so actually when you think about what you can do like right now, there are many seeds that you can actually start outside that I think people don't realize. I think we're very conditioned to think that, you know, it has to be
warm out. You gotta wait till Derby.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh, that's so true. Like, don't plant your tomatoes till Derby. So the first thing to note is that there are average frost dates in Louisville around April 15th and around October 15th are basically April 15th is when we usually see our last frost or on average our last freezing temperature in the evening. And then October, the first kind of freezing temperature for the cold weather season. And so those are really important dates to remember when you're thinking about planting anything outdoors. It's kind of a base thing to understand. But we can start, there are a number of crops that are within the coal crop family that you can put outside and actually just start the seeds outside when it's colder. Mm-hmm. And they actually germinate a lot better and they do a lot better. They get a better start because they prefer cooler temperatures to germinate, like spinach that I mentioned before, broccoli, cauliflower, things like that. I think everybody loves peas. I talked to, well, there's a few people, but most people really love peas. And those
are... Well, they don't like frozen mushy peas, but fresh,
fresh peas, right?
Who doesn't like that?
So peas are a great thing that you can actually go, you know, the recommendation is to plant them 4 to 6 weeks before your last frost date. So, you know, they can go in the ground. They could have gone in the ground 2 weeks ago. They can go in the ground, you know, now they are a great crop to put out and to just kind of jumpstart the garden for the spring. I think the one thing that is a challenge for cold weather growing is that we put a lot of effort into our summer gardens, right? And by the time it's like August and
we're
September,
exhausted.
We're tired and we've been fighting weeds and we've been working
those
hard.
Weeds.
And, you know,
hey, that's another advantage of cold weather growing. Fewer weeds,
absolutely.
Right?
And so I find it's really helpful to think about kind of at this time of the year, what you want to do throughout the year and actually make a calendar, make a plan. Because when it does come to actually like July and August, that's when you want to start planting your fall garden.
Right.
And it's a great time to, take care of the plants that might be finishing their life cycle in the summer. But even if you still have tomatoes growing, you can put spinach seeds around them. And, you know, in a month or two, the spinach is going to get a little bit taller and the tomato plant's going to be dying off. And then you've got a whole new like crop that's going to be growing for you to be able to pick. So planning ahead, I think, is really helpful just because once that season starts, you know, it's hard to kind of pause and have that time to think about it. So I think that's a really good. And then there's a number of infrastructures that you can use to protect your plants. The thing about cold weather growing, I think a lot of people are afraid of just the freezing temperature, but it's actually not not specifically the freezing temperature that affects these cold tolerant plants. It's really the cold winds and the cold wet precipitation that for a lot of them is the reason that they stop living. And so
Or thriving.
Because some of them will just stop, you know, growing and then they can come back in the spring. But a very simple protection, like what we call a row cover, is like a very thin, lightweight fabric that, can be placed.
Lets light through.
And precipitation, but can be placed over. It's like a little blanket.
Not plastic.
You can use plastic if you suspend it above the plant.
Right.
So you'll see, we'll call them low tunnels, are what a lot of growers will use to just build. Basically, they'll take PVC pipe is what I see mostly used.
Or any kind of frame.
Any kind of frame that can hold the plastic or the
maybe three or four
cover.
Feet high, right?
Yep, above the plant. And then, you know, you can stretch that the length of your garden bed, and that will protect your plants against those winds and that kind of cold, wet precipitation.
In that case, you would have to be watering because the water's not going to come through.
Another great benefit of cold weather growing is that you do not have to water as often as you do in the summer. So, you know, you water and then you don't really have to, you do want to check, right? Because you're going to get warmer days from the sun, especially when the sun comes out. If you have plants under plastic, you'll get some evaporation.
But
you really don't have to water as often as you do in the summer, which is really nice. Yeah.
So you can either use a row cover that's like a fabric-y thing or a low tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
Or I mentioned cold frames. Do you want to explain
what those are? Cold frames are great as well. So a cold frame, the ones that I've seen most often used are kind of a wooden box maybe that's on the ground, like a raised bed might be what most people think of, that doesn't have soil. It's not full of soil. And then people will place like a piece of glass or fiberglass on top so it allows the sun to come in. And basically what that's doing is it's using the sun as solar energy to warm up the space underneath that glass so that the plants and actually the soil, which is really important, that the soil temperature is warmer, allowing those plants to grow more. Because things like kale, once it hits 40 degrees is when they start to grow. So if it's 10 degrees outside, actually I observed this in my high tunnel a couple weeks back, it was 20 degrees outside. It was the middle of the day. The sun was bright and shining. It was 85 degrees inside the high tunnel.
So
no supplemental heating, just the solar heat.
Can I ask about thermal mass? Like, do you have big barrels of water?
Just the layer of plastic. I have two layers of plastic in my high tunnel, and that is trapping that sun energy inside the tunnel, warming it up. Yeah.
So high tunnels are things you can walk in. We'll talk about the high tunnel initiative in a second, but just to finish the painting of the landscape, why don't you talk to us a little bit about what you've seen in sort of in terms of indoor growing?
Okay. So, you know, if you wanted to do indoor winter growing or just indoor growing in general, basically you're recreating the outdoor environment inside. So this is a great way to start seeds early, is by doing indoor growing. But also if you have plants that you would like you can do microgreens or herbs or lettuces inside. So basically it involves having a light source that is similar to the daylight. So you can
full
spectrum light. And they can be like a single light bulb, or you can get like these clamp lights on a pole and have it just on, you know, one plant.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can be, you know, a 4 foot long by, you know, 12 inch wide light and have multiple trays of plants underneath that you're growing. You keep the lights pretty close to the plants. So, you know, a couple inches above the plants, it really helps them to not get what
leggy.
We call leggy,
so
that they're not stretching their necks, you know, to reach the light. And then a little bit of airflow is helpful. So maybe a fan or, you know, something like that, that can keep the air moving around the plants. But really, those can be really simple and they can be very complicated. I mean, there's, you know, if anybody's ever heard of hydroponics, that's, you know, an indoor growing system where you're using water to basically distribute nutrients to the plant roots. And you've got lights above that are providing that full spectrum light for the plants.
We actually have a dining location at U of L now that has a little hydroponic station on the entryway.
Oh, that's so fun.
It's in the second floor of the SAC. It's called the Sandwich Shack. And so as all the folks are coming in to get their sandwiches, they're seeing lettuces in a demonstration hydroponic system.
It's pretty cool. Oh, that is very cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that's a little more higher tech, maybe not so much on the natural conservation side of things, but people do all kinds of really cool things with growing up walls and all kinds of indoor things.
Yeah,
too.
vertical farming is a term that people use to describe that type of growing. Yeah, there's a lot of taking warehouses and turning them into these indoor farms going on.
That's probably out of reach of most people. And besides, we want to encourage people to get outside
in the winter.
So let's go back to the whole high tunnel idea.
Okay.
This is a technology that has been around for years, of course. People use this in rural settings as well as urban ones, right?
Yes. And it's most familiar to, I think, rural communities, to rural farmers as a resource. And basically what a high tunnel is, it's kind of that low tunnel that we were talking about, you know, the hoops with the plastic over it, but it is something that you can walk into. And so most folks have probably seen a greenhouse before. A high tunnel is very similar to a greenhouse, but it does not have a heating source in most high tunnels. And it's for growing in the ground specifically. Mm-hmm. So the high tunnels can have heating sources, but like I said, most of them don't. And the idea is that you can protect your plants from those elements
the
that
wind,
I described before.
Mm-hmm.
It also, it's a tool that's used to actually improve for water conservation, because basically, because it doesn't rain within a high tunnel, it's necessary to irrigate. And a lot of folks, what they do is they set up drip irrigation systems, which uses much less water than we usually use to water our plants. So it's great for that. And it also helps to reduce the use of fertilizers and, the use of pesticides. You're growing in a more controlled environment.
Right, right.
So like we were talking about just in general in winter gardening, there aren't as many pests around and that's great. But also in the summer, growers will use high tunnels and they use them for like tomatoes and actually tropical crops. And they see reduced pest issues in those tunnels. And specifically with tomatoes, because tomatoes don't like to be wet. It's a great environment to grow tomatoes in.
Fungal issues that always attack my tomatoes.
Exactly.
Now that we get endless buckets of rain all year round around here. So my guest today here on Sustainability Now is Lilias Pettit-Scott, urban agriculture conservationist with the Jefferson County Soil and Water Conservation District, which you can find online at jeffcd.org, jeffcd.org. And tell us about this urban high tunnel initiative that people can tap into.
So the Urban High Tunnel Initiative was started back in the fall of 2016. It's a partnership between the Soil and Water Conservation District and the Natural Resources Conservation Service, which is part of the USDA. They have a program called EQIP, which provides a cost share for high tunnels.
Oh, cool.
And in a rural environment where there's a larger piece of land for a farmer, usually those high tunnels are about like 30 feet by 90 feet. They're very large.
Wow.
And the cost share program reimburses you per square foot a certain amount. And so with a large high tunnel, it covers, you know, the majority of the cost for that tunnel. But when you are in an urban environment and you want to, say, put up a high tunnel that's maybe 14 feet by 24 feet, you're dealing with a couple hundred square feet instead of a couple thousand square feet.
Yeah,
and so
the
cost, it can be more expensive in an urban environment to get this high tunnel, because one thing that doesn't change is the cost of delivery and the cost of labor to put the high tunnel up.
Yeah.
And so what we've done is work with the NRCS agency to bring more funding. The Conservation District has raised to lower the cost of that high tunnel for urban residents to about, they only pay about 7% of what the high tunnel costs.
Wow.
So in what we were seeing is that if folks were trying to build them in an urban environment and really just build smaller tunnels, they were paying about 50% because the square footage was reduced.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to make it more accessible to people. So we've raised money to be able to bring those costs down even more.
7%?
Yeah.
Give us a feeling for what the costs are.
Okay. So for instance, a tunnel that is around 14 by 24 feet might cost $2,000 to build, but folks that are part of our program are only paying about $200 to $300 for those units.
Wow.
So it's a pretty drastic reduction in the cost that they would need to pay.
That is so cool.
And a lot of that also is, you know, it's covering the labor to put them up. And so on a farm where folks might be very familiar with these systems and have the tools to build them themselves, they can buy kits and they can put them up. And in a more urban environment where people might not have access to those tools, easier for them to be able to pay for somebody to install them. So we're able to help them cover those costs, which is really great.
That's awesome. So people can apply for this now, right? It's a rotating application
they
process.
They can apply
for
it anytime. And the program is really focused on assisting residents that are living in parts of our city where they have reduced access to fresh foods. So we really try to, you know, connect with those residents, people who are growing food, people who want to grow food, and get as many applications from those parts of the city. But we definitely encourage anybody to apply. And it doesn't just have to be individuals. It can also be nonprofit organizations as well access the funds.
So even like a community garden could get a high tunnel.
Absolutely, a community garden could get a high tunnel.
Oh, that's cool. I don't think I've seen that in any of our community gardens.
There's one high tunnel out at Farnsley Mormon.
Okay. Okay, I haven't been out there. Yeah.
And I think that might be the only community garden that I'm aware of that has one.
All right. So think about it, my friends. If you want to really get going with winter growing, you might want a high tunnel, and you'd only have to pay for 7% of it. That's great. You can check out jeffcd.org for more information, or you can contact Kurt Mason, right?
Mm-hmm. Or me. Either or.
I've got Kurt's contact information in front of me, so I'll share it with the listeners. Kurt Mason is at 859-490-0113, or you can email him kurtmason, M-A-S-O-N, at ky.usda.gov. Well, there's a couple other things happening in the near future that I wanted to talk about before we end with sort of resources for people. The first one that's coming up on Wednesday, March 20th, is the next Urban Agriculture Coalition meeting. I know you're actively involved with them. Tell us about that.
So the Urban Agriculture Coalition started together 2 years ago, and we have been bringing together all of the folks that are working on agriculture and garden-focused programs in the city to really connect and work towards a shared vision on what we see about what we want to see happening in our city around urban agriculture. We focus on education, helping folks to increase their production and distribution of foods within our area. And last year, we started working with the library on the How-To Festival, which was awesome. I know you're going to talk about that.
No, great. We can talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's been really fun for us to bring more presentations at the How-To Festival that are about gardening and agriculture.
There always have been some. This
there
is
always
more like
have
a,
been.
A curated experience now where people can get the full suite of growing in the city, right?
Yeah. So we were able to raise some funds to add additional tents to the festival, so that we could add some more programming. And it's been really, really fun. And then we have an info tent about the Urban Ag Coalition and a seed swap, which happens all day at the How-To Festival. And so that festival is May 11th from 10 to 3. And
at the main library on York Street.
And so folks can come get seeds, they can bring seeds to share, and they can learn about so many different things in addition to gardening, but a lot of gardening and agriculture focused workshops.
So if folks want to learn more or get involved in the Urban Ag Coalition, they can come on out to the next meeting, which is Wednesday, March 20th at noon. You'll have lunch, right, at the second floor conference room in the common table, which is 2234 West Market. And there's now a website for the Urban Ag Coalition, foodandneighborhoods.org/grow.
Yes. And that website, if you want to know where your local community garden is a great place to go. There's an awesome map on there with contact information for all the community gardens in Louisville. If you have a community garden and you don't see yours on there, please contact us and let us know so we can add you. But there's also information on, you know, there's a whole page about gardening and growing food and, you know, from beginner to intermediate to advanced level gardeners to understand and get access to resources too. And there's a whole bunch of stuff, but it's a great website.
Farmers markets?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's also a list of all the farmers markets in Louisville. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's some resources about cold weather growing. Well, in our last bit of time together, let's talk about that. What are some good resources for people who want to get started? Maybe they've even applied for the High Tunnel Grant. But what can people turn to in terms of books and resources?
So local resources that we have from Kentucky include UK's High Tunnel or Planting Calendars is really what they are for the different regions throughout the state.
Oh.
There's one for our region, which they are calling Region 2. And those are on the University of Kentucky's website.
UKY.edu.
Yep, UKY.edu. And then there's kind of like a cold weather farmer guru. His name is Elliot Coleman. And he has a great book, Four Season Harvest, that helps to just really kind of demystify growing and to understand what's possible. His farm is in Maine.
Yeah, he's so not kidding around. He's not kidding around.
he's dealing with many feet of snow every year. So
you think you got it tough in Kentucky.
Yeah, if he can do it, we can do it.
Yeah.
And then
he's got books out that people can get at the library.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Four Seasons Harvest, Winter Harvest Handbook, and the New Organic Grower.
Yeah, he's an excellent resource, and he's always updating the books. You know, he goes back. He's a wealth of information. He's
Elliot
fantastic.
Coleman, Elliot Coleman. Coleman. And then what is this Mother of a Hubbard blog? That's hilarious.
Oh, yes. I love this blog. So there is a lovely woman that lives in Eastern Kentucky. Her name is Kathy Raymeyer. I hope I'm saying her last name right. But she has a blog called Mother of a Hubbard. And she started the blog. She was growing for her family and started doing some testing on what she could grow in the winter.
Fun.
And she actually has a ton of information, specific tutorials on how to build those low tunnels we talked about. She has a sheet, and I printed it out here because I wanted to make sure that I told you all about it. All of her trials on different varieties of foods that she was growing through the winter, she's listed. And then when you would plant them, which is so helpful. It's called the Recommended Winter Vegetables and Planting Dates for Eastern Kentucky. And what's helpful is Eastern Kentucky is a little bit colder, actually, than we are. So these dates should work for our area. They're a little bit colder, so we should be fine here. And they're USDA Zone 6B and we're 7A, so it's a little, you know. So that's a great resource, and just her blog is fantastic for just trying to understand how to get started and what is possible with growing through the winter.
And that's at, what a great URL this is, motherofahubbard.com. That's H-U-B-B-A-R-D. So she must grow a lot of Hubbard squash, I guess.
I bet she does. She must really like that.
Can you grow squash in a high tunnel?
You can grow squash in a high tunnel.
Cool.
It's not a crop that you can really grow over in the cold in a high tunnel.
Yeah, probably not.
Because it's a more heat tolerant, or it's a less cold tolerant plant.
Right?
That's the right word. If it was a heated tunnel, it would be different. But yeah, Hubbard squash, I'm sure she grows a lot of it. The other resource I wanted to tell folks about that just came out this year that I've been really excited about, and this is specific for high tunnels, is a book by Pam Dawling, D-A-W-L-I-N-G, called The Year-Round Hoop House, Polytunnels for All Seasons and All Climates. And she's a grower in Virginia in the same USDA zone that we are in. And she has an incredible resource in this book. It has planting calendars, information about all the different things that they grow in their tunnels, harvest dates, just really, really in-depth information. And it also talks about some things that are getting really popular to grow in high tunnels, which is ginger and turmeric, and how you can do that, as well as growing berries in high tunnels, which is also a good thing to grow. So,
right. So you can even do perennial crops in there.
Absolutely. Yep.
I hadn't thought of that. Boy, so many options for people. So give us that name again. The Year-Round Hoop House.
The Year-Round Hoop House by Pam Dawling. And it's The Year-Round Hoop House, Polytunnels for All Seasons and All Climates.
And hoop house is just another term for high tunnel.
Yeah.
Same thing, right?
High tunnel, hoop house, polytunnel, those are all the same. Yep.
So this sounds great. I mean, one last thing to mention is that it's actually pretty economical, right? Like this, the winter growing doesn't cost a lot necessarily. We talked about like the high cost, high tech indoor things, but in general, it's a pretty affordable thing to do.
Absolutely.
Right?
You don't have to get a high tunnel to grow,
right.
You know, and the Mother of a Hubbard blog, actually, she discusses a lot of things that you can do very low cost to get started. But even just thinking about, I've seen people get like plastic milk cartons and put, you know, and use those as like tiny little, you know,
little greenhouses
that heat up. But there is all sorts of things that you can do to extend the life of your crops throughout the winter that are not expensive.
Yeah.
It's very economical.
Yeah. Again, it's a great way to just stay. I like gardening because it keeps me in touch with nature, too. So this is like a great way to excuse to get outside in the winter, the cold season, whatever it is, and to stay active and in touch with nature. I think it's great.
Me too.
Well, I'm so glad you took the time to come in and convince us today to cold weather growing. We look forward to seeing you at the How To Festival, May 11th at the library. Maybe folks will come on out at the Urban Ag Coalition on Wednesday, March 12th at noon at the Common Table on West Market. Any last thing you want to say?
Thank you so much for having me. And if, you know, I hope that folks are getting more excited about going out this weekend and maybe planting some pea seeds in the ground. Yeah. That would be fantastic. We could have peas, you know, early peas. So
sweeter peas, too.
Sweeter peas, yeah.
All right, Lilias Pettit-Scott from the Jefferson County Soil and Water Conservation District, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Stay tuned, everybody. Coming up in just a second, we're going to do your community action calendar with lots of ideas for how you can get involved in making sustainability a reality now here in Louisville. So stay tuned, my friends. The sweet, sweet sounds of local favorites Appalachian behind me now, and many thanks to them for giving us permission to use their local music on the SoundCloud podcast editions of our programs here on Forward Radio. You can find out more about them at appalachian.com. You're tuned in to Sustainability Now with me, Justin Mogg, here on Forward Radio, WFMP LP Louisville 106.5 FM, and live streaming to the world at forwardradio.org. It is that time, my friends, time to get your pencils sharpened and your calendars out. Sustainability will only come now if we get together in community and make it happen. So there are many opportunities to do that this week. It's a packed calendar. I want to get right to it, but I did promise during our interview with Lilias that I'd tell you about soil testing for nutrients. The Soil and Water Conservation District has partnered with Jefferson County Extension to provide free basic soil testing of up to two areas tested per property here in Jefferson County. The test reveals the nutrient content of the soil, the pH, and recommendations for improving the soil for your chosen crops. Your soil samples will be sent to the University of Kentucky for testing, and you'll get results back in about 2 weeks. So, to obtain a soil sample voucher for free soil testing, please contact the Jefferson County Soil and Water Conservation District at 502-499-1900, or you can email them at jeffersonswcd@gmail.com. That's jeffersonswcd@gmail.com. Now, you can also get your soil tested for lead for free as well. The district sends these soil samples out to the University of Massachusetts. They require 3 cups of dry soil for lead and soil testing. Currently, the Soil and Water Conservation District has additional funding for vouchers to test for lead in garden soil. So residents can get 1 voucher per property to be tested for lead, and those results will also include the pH and nutrient information as well. You'll receive results for the level of lead in your soil and the pH and nutrient levels all in one report. Now, the cost of lead testing without a voucher is about $17, so this is a great deal, but if you don't have a free voucher, it's still a reasonable amount to know that your soil is safe or not. Results will be returned in approximately 3 weeks. Now, please contact the Jefferson County Soil and Water Conservation District. Again, that number is 502-499-1900, or email them at jeffersonswcd@gmail.com to obtain a lead testing voucher. So to take your soil samples, you're going to take multiple small samples from the area to be tested, about 4 to 8 inches down. You mix them together to equal about 2 cups total of soil. That's all you really need for your sample. Allow it to dry thoroughly, put in a clean bag or container, and then you bring it to the extension office out in Middletown at 200 Juno Drive. Before bringing it in, make sure to get your vouchers from the Soil Water Conservation District, or you can pay for it there. $7 for a regular test out at the Soil and Water Conservation District. So now's the time to grow. So if you haven't tested your soil lately, this is a great time to do it for absolutely free. All right, now what's on the calendar this week, my friends? Well, coming up Tuesday, March 19th in the evening at 7 p.m., it's the Greater Louisville Sierra Club presenting a discussion on reducing greenhouse gases by 80%. That has been stated as the city's goal, and they'll be gathering at the United Crescent Hill Ministries building in Clifton, 150 South State Street. And join us as we welcome representatives from Louisville Metro Office of Sustainability discussing the 80% by 2050 greenhouse gas emissions reduction initiative. In May of 2016, Mayor Greg Fisher signed the Global Covenant of Mayors, which was an agreement signed by over 9,000 cities across the world, committing us to inventory and develop a strategy to reduce Louisville's greenhouse gas emissions. Globally, cities play a major role in these efforts, as 70% of all carbon emissions come from cities. The city's reduction commitment is a three-step process. First, we'll be conducting a greenhouse gas inventory, then setting a reduction target of 80% by 2050, which has been set, and then creating a strategy to meet that target. And determining the strategy will be the focus of this year. Mayor Greg Fisher formed the Louisville Metro Office of Sustainability back in 2012 with a mission of promoting environmental conservation, health, wellness, and prosperity of citizens, and embedding sustainability into the culture of Louisville. The office works to create a culture of sustainability through broad-based education and awareness efforts, as well as implementation of projects and initiatives to influence behavior change. So the Sierra Club hopes you'll attend and provide input to help determine a strategy for moving forward on this initiative. Of course, it's free and open to the public. Tuesday, March 19th at 7 p.m., United Crescent Hill Ministries in Clifton, 150 South State Street. More information at LouisvilleSierraClub.org. Now, coming up Wednesday the 20th at noon, it's the next meeting of the Urban Agriculture Coalition. As a Forward Radio community partner, the Urban Ag Coalition has a mission to create an equitable and resilient food system here in Louisville by supporting and expanding both home and community-based food production and distribution, by providing agricultural education and resources, and restoring the relationships between our gardens and their communities and ecosystems. Meetings are always open to all, and they are held in the second floor conference room above the Common Table Cafe, which is a great business if you have not been out there, at 2234 West Market Street, at high noon on Wednesday the 20th. More information at foodinneighborhoods.org/grow. Also coming up Wednesday at noon, another opportunity to hear Returning to Haifa. You heard about this on my program a few weeks ago. It's the Reading Kanafani in Kentucky project that Russ Vandenbroek, U of L professor of theater arts and director of the Peace, Justice, and Conflict Transformation Program at U of L, is currently directing. A reading of Ghassan Kanafani's novella Returning to Haifa, adapted for the stage by Ismail Khalidi and Naomi Wallace, who were also guests on my program that week, will be followed by facilitated audience conversations. The play is focused on Palestine, the loss of home, and involuntary relocation. Fellowship of Reconciliation is a community partner along with U of L's Cooperative Consortium for Social Justice Research, as well as several departments at U of L. This project reaffirms theater that engages society rather than providing escape from it, by blending arts, humanities, and social science to probe the meaning of home and its loss through displacement, dispossession, gentrification, and urban renewal. More information is available at KentuckyMonthly.com/events, but you can come out on Wednesday, March 20th at noon. It's going to be held at the U of L Health Sciences Center, the medical complex downtown, at the Kornhauser Library Auditorium there on Preston Street, just south of Ali. And then there'll be two final shows, Thursday and Friday of this week, the 21st and 22nd, both at 7:30 p.m. at U of L's main campus on the Thrust Theater, which is located at Floyd and University Avenue. All three shows are absolutely free and open to the public, and they will all have those community conversations facilitated afterwards, so don't miss it. Also, final note, Ismail and Naomi's brand new play about Iraq, The Corpse Washer, which is a wonderful, wonderful performance, really eye-opening and moving. It runs at Actors Theater as part of the Humana Festival of New American Plays through April 7th. More information is at actorstheater.org. That's theater with an R-E. Now, coming up on Thursday, it is the Third Thursday Lunch presented by our sponsor, the Fellowship of Reconciliation and Sowers of Justice Network, on March 21st at noon at Hotel Louisville, 120 West Broadway, there at the corner of 2nd and Broadway. You'll hear this month from Amy Lienertz on Human Trafficking 101. Yes, my friends, Derby season is right around the corner, and that is peak season for human trafficking right here in Louisville. All those who love Derby and love social justice need to come hear about this, open your eyes, learn more about human trafficking. It's a form of modern-day slavery and is considered to be one of the fastest-growing criminal industries in the world today. Defined under U.S. federal law, human trafficking includes labor trafficking, domestic servitude, and sex trafficking. Child and adult victims are trafficked in every country and every state in the U.S. Amy Lienertz is the founder and director of Free to Hope Incorporated, a nonprofit organization that operates out of Louisville, Kentucky. She will teach us what human trafficking is, what it is not, give examples of the warning signs of trafficking, and provide a basis of understanding of its roots, causes, and effects. That's absolutely free. The third Thursday lunch presentation is at noon at Hotel Louisville, 120 West Broadway. But there is a delicious lunch buffet that starts at 11:30 a.m. It's only $7 at the door. Reservations by the Monday before the lunch are desired, so you can RSVP to Pat Geyer at 502-609-7985 if you're thinking of coming for lunch on Thursday. Now, coming up on Thursday evening, it's a benefit show for the Louisville Community Grocery. We've been at this project for years, and we need community support. We are raising funds to get this thing off the ground, and what a great thing. A benefit show at Kaiju, 1004 East Oak Street. The bands performing will be G's Louise and Package with Professor L DJing and a late night set by Shy RL. It's all taking place on Thursday, March 21st. Doors open at 8. The show starts at 9. There is a suggested donation of $7 to $10 to support the Louisville Community Grocery. Your effort to get a cooperative, community-owned grocery store in one of our urban downtown food deserts finally off the ground. So please come on out, enjoy the show, make a donation to this great project at Kaiju, 1004 East Oak Street on Thursday, March 21st at 9 p.m. Now, coming up Friday the 22nd at 10 a.m. and then Saturday the 23rd at 10 a.m., it's two opportunities to plant some more trees. You can join me on Friday at 10. It's the Planting o' the Green in Smoketown and Germantown. In addition to hosting the annual St. Patrick's Day Parade for the past 3 years, the Ancient Order of Hibernians have joined MSD, Olmsted Parks Conservancy, Brightside Trees Louisville, the Louisville Tree Service, and other Friends of Trees in presenting the Planting with the Green. They are looking for volunteers to help with this year's plantings. The first is on Breckenridge and Clay Streets in Smoketown on Friday, March 22nd at 10 a.m. The second is on Crown, Ellison, Julia, and Roofer Avenues in Germantown. It'll be on Saturday the 23rd at 10 a.m. If you or a group is available to help out on either of those days, you can email Councilman Brandon Cohn, and his email address is Brandon, that's B-R-A-N-D-O-N, Cohn, C-O-A-N, at louisvilleky.gov. Also coming up on Friday at noon, it's the next in the University of Louisville's Garden Commons workshop series. This week we'll be talking about composting at the Garden Commons. You can join us in U of L's Organic Garden Commons for a special workshop on composting and vermiculture. That's worm composting with Dr. Brian Barnes. You know him from Forward Radio's Critical Thinking for Everyone. Well, he also directs U of L's community composting projects. It's located just a couple blocks north of the Garden Commons with volunteer power every Sunday, noon to 2 p.m. All hands on deck. Everyone is welcome, and folks can come and help turn some compost in and take home some rich organic fertilizer for their own home garden, community gardens, tree planting projects, whatever you got going on. And Brian will be sharing the basics of how, why, and what to compost in any situation. He'll tell you about this project, but also just in general about composting. And he'll be we will be creating do-it-yourself composting bins that you can take home to start your own compost. More information is at louisville.edu/sustainability. But come on out. No RSVP required. It's free and open to the public on Friday the 22nd at noon at the Garden Commons at the north end of the Belknap campus. It's at the Cultural Center, which is right across the parking lot from the clock tower, so you can't miss it. Now, coming up Saturday, March 23rd, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's a great workshop put on by Louisville Showing Up for Racial Justice, LSURG. It's Beyond Ramps and Rights, Disability Justice and Racial Justice Organizing, taking place at La Casita Center in Old Louisville, 223 East Magnolia Avenue. Again, Saturday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Disabled and ill people remain isolated and marginalized within most communities and most racial and social justice movements. Well, it's time to include an anti-ableism frame and analysis into our agendas, political thinking, and our action. This training explores what disability means across lines of race, class, gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, and even citizenship. Grounded in an understanding of the necessity for racial, gender, and economic justice, this anti-oppression training seeks to embed anti-ableism deep into the mix of our work and lives. Ramps, racial profiling, sterilizations, sovereignty, sexual domestic violence, immigration, hate crimes, anti-poor city ordinances, restroom policing and incarceration, whether it be in prisons, nursing homes, or psychiatric facilities. These are all locations where ableism intertwines with other supremacy-based systems to consolidate and amplify white supremacy, misogyny, and imperialism. So come learn about this. It's co-facilitated by National Surge trainer and leader Sebastian Margaret and Independence Seekers leader and LSURG member Amanda Stahl. Attendance is free, but you must register in advance at eventbrite.com. You can find the link and more information at facebook.com/SurgeLouisville. That's S-U-R-J Louisville. And it's on Saturday, 9 to 1 at La Casita Center. Also on Saturday, it's a tree giveaway taking place at 11 a.m. goes to 1 p.m. where all the trees are gone at Jefferson Community and Technical College, right down the street from us here at Ford Radio in the Hayburn Building. They're at 125 West Broadway in the student parking lot. You can't miss it. That giant, giant piece of pavement at JCTC. They'll be distributing all Kentucky native trees, including pawpaws, my friends. The trees will be awarded on a first-come basis, a limit of 5 trees per Louisville resident. You must be a Jefferson County resident with proof of residency. So don't just show up. You got to bring an ID or a utility bill or something that demonstrates you are a resident. The trees cannot be planted in street rights of way, parks, or in containers. They must be planted in Jefferson County land, right here in our soil on private property. Species fact sheets, planting, and maintenance instructions will be provided. If you have any questions, you can contact the Metro Division of Community Forestry at 502-574-3927 or communityforestry@louisvilleky.gov. There's more information online at louisvilleky.gov. Also coming up Saturday the 23rd, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. again at La Casita Center in Old Louisville, 223 East Magnolia. It's the Sol Corn Festival. You heard about it when I interviewed Stephen Bartlett a few weeks ago. Well, come connect with the Latino community and sustainable agriculture of Louisville Sol as we enjoy a free community celebration of life-giving corn like you've never had it before. Grown right here in Kentucky is a nonprofit project of Sol to sustain our seed heritage and enrich our community. Tamales, tortillas, pupusas, and more will be on hand, so stop in and enjoy with us at La Casita Center in Old Louisville, 4:30 to 6:30 on Saturday the 23rd. Sunday the 24th at the Speed Cinema at 12:30, it's a free screening of the film Ann Braden, Southern Patriot. It's a first-person documentary about the extraordinary life of this American civil rights leader from Louisville. It will be screening on the 24th as part of Speed Cinema's Apple Shop at 50 celebration. It's absolutely free and open to the public. Ann Braden, of course, was hailed by Dr. Martin Luther King in his 1963 letter from Birmingham Jail as a white Southerner whose rejection of her segregationist upbringing was eloquent and prophetic. If you do not know about Ann Braden, or even if you do know about her, you must come out and see this excellent documentary. It will feature a post-screening discussion with co-director Mimi Pickering and Dr. Kate Fossil, director of U of L's Ann Braden Institute for Social Justice Research. More information is at speedmuseum.org/cinema. And lastly, on Sunday, March 24th at 2 p.m., it's a spring foraging workshop at Lots of Food in Portland, 1647 Portland Avenue. The bees are out foraging, and so can you. If you're into local food, it doesn't get any more local than your own backyard. So come on out for a workshop and find out what's out there to nibble while you wait for the first greens out of the garden. Find out about greens, flowers, and spring fruits that are out there right now for the picking. Tickets are on sale now on a sliding scale based on your ability to pay, all of which are a great deal because they'll lead you to free food. So details, tickets, and more is at LouisvilleLotsOfFood.com. Again, the workshop will be Sunday, March 24th, 2 to 4 p.m. And again, it'll repeat Sunday on April 14th, 2 to 4. So find out about both of them and get your tickets at LouisvilleLotsOfFood.com. Well, that's it. That's all the time we have for today here on Sustainability Now. Stay tuned to Ford Radio. Lots of great stuff coming up, and I'll be back in your ears again in 1 week's time, my friends. Them birds are making music all the day. Said we.